While I have an opportunity, I also want to say that, as I mentioned before, a third of the voters who cast ballots yesterday in Boston did cast their ballots for City Councilor Tito Jackson. And Councilor Jackson joins us now in the studio. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me, Magda.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing super. I believe that the city of Boston is better today than it was yesterday. I want to congratulate Mayor Walsh on his victory. But I also know that the things that we brought to the table, the conversation shift, the narrative shift in the city of Boston was important. Everyone is not doing well in Boston, and things are not going great for everyone in this city. And it is critical that we have leadership that acknowledges that, that not only acknowledges it, but actually does something about those issues. In particular, with structural issues like racial inequality, yeah, it's not enough. We can't pat ourselves on the back for having a conversation. And in fact, for not even acknowledging that Mayor Menino had a conversation for a year in 2003. People are looking for action. With the issues around housing, we know that 5,000 eviction proceedings happened last year in courts for Boston-based people. You know what? That means in the next 4 years, if we don't deal with that, that means 20,000 people. And mind you, that didn't mean everyone got kicked out, but it definitely means that those issues are real. And issues around schools. I had a bunch of young people in my office working, those who actually led the walkout. We have to deal with these issues, and we have to roll our sleeves up right now.
So, Councilor Jackson, let me ask you, I mean, about housing specifically, but also about education, but really about housing. You've been talking about, you talked about it every day over the course of this entire campaign, every single day. And, you know, we've got tons of polling and also just common sense that said it was the number one issue in the minds of Bostonians. But you know, you got a third of the vote. Marty Walsh got two-thirds of the vote. Yeah. I'm wondering why you failed to connect on this, like, key issue.
That's
voters.
Actually not true, okay. Magna. He spent a little bit more money than me.
Several million.
Yeah. So I'm actually pretty proud of what we were able. First off, Mayor Walsh did not use the word gentrification prior to January 12th, and that I know of. And so having a conversation about displacement, gentrification, and people getting pushed out was not being aggressively had in the city of Boston, and people weren't holding his feet to the fire. So that is a critical component. So I don't believe that this is about and actually what I would say to you is that the win from my campaign is that the things that we put forward, he adopted. Let's look at this issue of the disparities around contracting. And so there's something that there's a prerequisite to having goals for women and people of color to get city contracts. They have to do a study. It's called a disparity study. Mayor Walsh promised he would do one day one. You know what? You know when he announced it? The day before our first debate. There's progress there. Immigrant Legal Defense Fund. When I put that forward, he said it was a slippery slope and didn't want to do it. And now there's an Immigrant Legal Defense Fund. Question number two, I actually did 12 debates statewide and really led the effort. He jumped in the end. But question number four, he was against, and now he's actually adopted. We are making, we made some progress there, but the people of the city of Boston and the over 30,000 people who voted for me, they want to see action. They want to see it urgently, and they want to see accountability in this next term. And that's why we're not going away.
Yeah. So, I mean, about question two and question four, just to be clear, that was in the 2016 election cycle. But let me ask you, though, then practically speaking, what are the things that you would like to see Mayor Walsh accomplish in these next 4 years that he has? And what role do you see for yourself?
So I'll start with the second question. I'm not going away. I have lived in this city. I love this city, and it's given me all that I am. And we are pulling together a coalition that is going to be citywide, and it's going to continue to bring up these issues of income inequality, the disparities that we are seeing, the need to close the achievement gap and full funding for the Boston Public Schools, and we have to stop the violence in the city. We are going to continue to hold to account all of those, not only the mayor, but all of those in elected office and who are supposed to be doing this work. And we will have an opportunity to speak about that later after we pull folks together. But that is absolutely critical. We live in a city that has some of the highest income inequality in the whole country. So when you say, again, when you say things are going great, well, you know what? Not for everybody. We live in a city that has some of the highest wealth inequality and a wealth gap that is nearly a quarter of $1 million between a white family and a black family. So we have a lot of work to do there. On the first, he has to deal with the issues. Development isn't in its development isn't good just because it happens. If they put forward housing that people can't afford, you can't count that unit as affordable. There was a unit at Ink Block, and someone did one of the folks pulled this out online. It is $3,400 for a one bedroom, and it's considered an affordable unit
for someone making $125,000.
For someone who makes $125,000, 50% of people in Boston make $35,000 or less. So that means the units that we are building, even for $70,000 to $120,000, which is our current affordable definition for families of four, we're leaving people behind. And we need a city, we need a government that sees that and deals with those issues right on and with urgency.
I'm not going to ask you the do you regret you ran question, because of course not. But I will ask you, is there anything you would have done differently in your campaign?
Anything I would have done differently? Hey, I would have loved to have raised a whole lot more money. Sadly, and it's so interesting, this component around money, because we have people who say that they want to get money out of politics, but at the press corps, if you go back and look at the number of stories, and I haven't gotten a chance to do this, most of the stories in this election cycle were about me not having money, or it was in every single one of the stories. So there's this validity test.
But that was
a
fact of the campaign,
though. But I understand. But the question is, it wasn't a question about ideas or visions or plans, or even when I did put my budget out, it got absolute short shrift when I actually put the budget out, which actually showed that we could do some different things. That's the one factor. But you know what? I would have done it again all day, every day, 10 times a day, because of the people that I met in every neighborhood, from South Boston to Hyde Park to Roxbury to Dorchester, who are going through the same exact things. The most amazing team that I've of people who care. Because if you're working for me, by the way, we didn't have a lot of money. So you weren't doing it because you were getting paid big bucks, right? You were doing it because you believed in our ability in Boston to make sure that the power goes to the people, not those in power, not those who are profiting.
I want to play a piece of tape for you. Yesterday on WBUR for our election night special coverage, we had on Michael Curry, former head of the Boston branch of the NAACP. Now, he didn't weigh in with an endorsement during the election. Last night, though, he said this.
Do I think that voters of color and communities really knew what was at stake and what measures to look at evaluating this mayor? No.
Michael Curry then went on to say that he thought that the NAACP report card that came out relatively late in the campaign didn't come out in time for folks to really evaluate Mayor Walsh. I should note that Mayor Walsh and his campaign had a point-by-point rebuttal, essentially, of the report card. And, you know, maybe in a future day we will dive into that. But I just wanted Councilor Jackson to hear what you thought about Michael Curry saying he's not sure that voters of color really knew what was at stake.
I don't think people realize the urgency of what's going on. When I started, there was 14, 15 development projects in my district. Now you're talking about 50, 60 at a time. When I started, we were, and we did it on a biweekly basis. We actually looked at and sat down with developers who were doing things in my district on a biweekly basis. Right now, there's too many of those sites in my district to even deal with right now, to deal with every one of them. People are getting pushed out at the fastest rate that I've seen. And I think to Michael's point, listen, we spend $1 billion a year in Boston, just of your money on city contracts. Less than 2% under this administration, under the Walsh administration, goes to women and people of color owned businesses of $1 billion. That's happening right now today. When we look at healthcare disparities, when we look at housing, when we look at schools, still many kids are caught in the achievement gap, and it's actually growing rather than contracting. Our schools are being underfunded. And so, yeah, we have a lot of work to do, and I believe that to be the case.
So last question for you, Counselor. In a way, I feel like what I'm hearing you, how I'm hearing you now makes me think that that your campaign, not for the mayorship of Boston, but your campaign for Boston, right, is not going to end, which is great. But I do also want to ask you, do you feel optimistic about Boston's future under Mayor Marty Walsh?
I believe and think that Mayor Walsh. Well, so let's actually set the record straight. I backed Mayor Walsh in 2013. We had a conversation. Actually, I think we were closer than you and I are right now, Magna. The reason why I ran to, I want people to understand, was not to take out Mayor Walsh. It was because the things that we talked about face to face were not done. The people who should have had opportunities were not actually at the table to have those opportunities. Olympics, IndyCar, all GE. Those are distractions from what the people of the city of Boston actually need, that they want, and they deserve. In addition, we also
But let me just say, I'm asking you about, do you feel optimistic about Boston's future under Mayor Walsh?
But you know what? I do believe that Mayor Walsh has an opportunity to do some great things. I was optimistic when I was yelling on stage for him in 2013. My question right now is not about optimism. It's about accountability. And that's what I'm going to work for. And that's what my coalition is going to work for. And so he has a chance. He has an opportunity. And he definitely does need to know that there will be accountability this time. There wasn't last time, but there will definitely be accountability this time. So I am optimistic that he will heed the things that I put forward. And I look forward to that being moved forward with urgency.
City Councilor Tito Jackson, I have to say, and I say this to everyone who runs in every race, thank you for being part of the democratic process. Thank you for joining us today, and we look forward to continue to hear from you about all the things that Bostonians care about. Thanks again.
Thank you for being part of the democratic process.
And let me remind folks that Boston Mayor Marty Walsh and his staff say that he will be joining us in the coming days, so we look forward to hearing from him. We'll take a quick break and be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston. Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and we're talking about election results last night in and around Massachusetts. Historic results yesterday in the Boston City Council election, because Bostonians elected the most diverse city council in the city's history. 6 of the 13 city councilors are now women of color. And as a comparison, let's just remember that 8 years ago, back in 2009, when Ayanna Pressley won a seat, she was the only woman on the council, and she was the first woman of color ever to be elected Boston City Councilor. And that was just back in 2009. Yesterday, Ayanna Pressley won her 5th term. And among the women joining her on the council, Lydia Edwards. She won the seat for District 1, which includes Charlestown, the North End, and East Boston. She was formerly deputy director of the Mayor's Office of Housing Stability. Lydia Edwards, welcome back to Radio Boston, and congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So first of all, how do you feel about your victory last night?
I feel elated. Our team was just amazing. It's just great to see hard work pay off. It feels great.
And so what does it mean to you that you're now one of six women of color on Boston City Council?
To be very frank, it means I'm proud of being a woman of color, but that's it means more that our message that connected beyond color lines, political lines, that we built a coalition that had Trump supporters, that had Bernie supporters, that had folks who had never voted before, that didn't speak English. That diversity means a lot to me.
Hmm. Well, because I've been seeing, longtime watchers of Boston politics say that it's about time because the city council, should start representing more of what the city looks like. And I'm just wondering how important you think that is in terms of the work that the city council does.
Well, I think any government body definitely should reflect the folks that are going to be directly impacted by them. So, yes, having half the council be people of color in general, I think, is just reflective of Boston and where the demographic changes or trends are going. And I think in terms of, impact in terms of that being the new council, I think you'll see it a lot more in the kids who are watching and a lot more in the young people who are thinking about politics, or people who may have not thought politics was for them, but until they see maybe someone like Michelle or Ayanna, and then they think, wow, I mean, that helped me looking at Michelle and Ayanna.
Huh. Wow. Okay. Well, so let's look forward here a little bit. I mean, what would you say are your immediate policy priorities once you begin work on the city council?
I think the first thing I actually want to do is a listening tour and get throughout the entire district and talk to folks, whether they were with me or not, and just to hear from everybody or as many people as possible to talk about, kind of the message that I had, and that, for them to really direct the agenda from day one. But a part of the message that I had that I think resonated was really talking about our housing and making sure that we are a part of, leading the city in stabilization and assuring that folks feel that they can still stay here. And that's through pathways of ownership. That's through looking at ways in which we're bringing small property owners to the table and just figuring out a combination of ways to move. And this is partly from my job before, to move the
city at the Office of Housing Stability when you were the director.
Yes, the Office of Housing Stability. But to move the city in a way that folks, we're growing our middle class and still developing, and instead of feeling that we're displacing our middle class, our working poor, and our working class.
Yeah. So, I mean, speaking of that displacement, back in 2014, I mean, we have some numbers that say that more than 5,000 no-fault eviction cases appeared in Boston Housing Court. And that's an issue that's especially touched some of the neighborhoods that you're now representing. Like, I'm thinking of East Boston.
Oh, yeah. No, I think displacement certainly is an issue. And the question is really, how do we not only stop that, but I mean, when we're building so many units in Boston, it's not for lack of housing, right? It's for lack of people, normal people being able to have access to that housing, or when they are in housing, for them to stay. And so when we build units, when the city is building affordable units, if they're, for me, if you're not building it with a way as a pathway out of poverty or a pathway to gaining equity and wealth, then you're missing half the sentence. People are definitely able to stay. You're able to pay your rent on a monthly basis. But if in 40 years, which is happening to a building in the North End, in 40 years, I think their 40 years is coming up, and they are where they were when they started. It was a deed restricted building that was deeply, deeply affordable. And now, 40 years from now, they have been paying rent at deeply affordable rates that no longer exist. And they're wondering if this building is sold at market, which it may be, they're all going to be homeless.
Hmm.
So that was 40 years, I feel, that we kicked the can instead of coming up with ways to pull people into a pathway of ownership, gaining equity, and figuring that out.
Right.
So, and that's what I think our policy needs to change.
So Lydia Edwards, let me ask you, I mean, you were at the Office of Housing Stability, so you were working for the city. You had a relationship with Boston Mayor Marty Walsh. Ostensibly, I mean, that's a very influential position when it comes to things like housing policy. I mean, what do you think you can accomplish on the city council that you couldn't get done at the Office of Housing Stability?
Well, I think there's not had a good relationship. I have a good relationship with the mayor, but also I think that there are several things that can be done when you are the elected official. One, you're leading the conversation from your district and from the grassroots. And when you're in an administration, you tend to be responsive to, which is not a bad position, right? You have resources, you have researchers, you have all these different things coming to help you respond to those things. But here, I think as a city council, you can lead the conversation. You can suggest certain things. And of course, you can introduce and produce and move ordinances that, again, working with my other council members and then hope, and then getting signed by the mayor, can go on to the State House to become law. So that you certainly couldn't do when you're in the city council, or excuse me, in the administration. I think you can also challenge more readily what's going on. And also, I think what's really exciting about this position, it's very close to being a community organizer, which is what I come from. And so if Amazon is going to be making its home in East Boston, the what I couldn't do as the deputy director, but I can do as city council, is demand a seat for my district at that table. You know, and making sure we're negotiating the best deal for not only just East Boston and my neighbors here, but the district and Boston as well.
My eyes just went wide because you did indeed remind us that the city of Boston's bid for Amazon does focus on Suffolk Downs. So Lydia Edwards, newly elected city council-elect for Boston's District 1, congratulations again, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for this opportunity. I really appreciate it.